Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track podcast with me, Stu Whiffin. I'll be your host for the next about an hour, I think. Today's guest is Silky. Or as I generally refer to him, Ollie. His stage name is Silky, which I will try and continue throughout the duration of this podcast. But I've known Silky for a long time, and I've never called him Silky. I've always called him Ollie. So if I do call him Ollie or Silky, I'm just putting you in the loop so you know where we're at. Silky come over to the Whiffin, my little shed-type garden studio bar thing, and we had a good catch-up. Silky's the front man and co-songwriter for Death of Guitar Pop, and they've got an album out, and they've currently just got a new single out, and the video is well worth a look. But I don't need to plug them anymore. We're gonna talk about what they do and talk about Silky's song choices over the next hour. And it was a really, really nice chat. You're gonna, if you haven't heard Silky before on Hardcore Listening, then you're in for a treat. He's a real gem of a guy. Big thanks to the Distraction Pieces Network for letting us put this podcast out on the network. Big shout outs to 76 for producing this, Brad Acton for the video content, and my name is Ad for the artwork. I think I've waffled enough. You know the drill by now that because of licensing laws and stuff like that, you know, we can't play all of the songs that we talk about throughout this podcast, but there is always an accompanying Spotify playlist. So we're on all the social media, so we post the links on there so you can go over and have a listen to the tracks that Silky chooses today. Enjoy it, and I'll see you at the end. 76, drop the intro music. I've got an announcement. Save Our Souls Clothing. www.sosclothing.co.uk. Why am I telling you this? Because they're our official sponsor. Yeah, that's right. Go and check them out because their clothing is off the scale. You're going to love it. So they've decided they want to be our sponsor, which is amazing. And what I have to do is I have to tell you about why they're amazing. So here's a little bit of blurb. So they've only been going a year. And they're based in Southend-on-Sea, just up the road from me. They put the company together based on a love of tattoos and alternative music. And they've worked with some of the greatest artists around the world to produce these items of clothing that are as unique as you lot. All of the designs are printed using biodegradable, sustainable and water-based inks. In addition to that, they only print on garments made by members of Fair Wear Foundation. I mean, come on, great clothing and a conscience. Since going live in April last year, they've seen their audience grow massively and are now selling orders all across the world. And they were recognised by Cosmopolitan magazine as one of the best sustainable clothing brands alongside names such as Stella McCartney. I mean, that's quite a first year, right? So go and check them out because they've put a lot of love into supporting this podcast and I couldn't be happier. What else they've done is they've given you 15% off. So if you head over to www.sosclothing.co.uk, do a bit of shopping, see what you like, throw it in the basket, and then on the way out, put in the discount code BEAT15, BEAT15, and that'll save you 15% off. Amazing, right? www.sosclothing.co.uk, official sponsors of Off The Beaten Track podcast. Let's get back to that podcast. It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network with me, Stu Whippin. Right, we are recording. It is a, yet again, every time I do this podcast, it's a sunny afternoon in my back garden. It's a little bit overcast, actually, but we've obviously had a summer like we've never had before, I think, and it disappeared, but we've had a little spell of sunshine again, so I'm happy. I've got a rather garish kind of summery shirt on my shorts, but today's guest is wearing what I expected him to wear. he's looking slick. My guest today is, what do I call you? Do I call you Silky?
I think I'm better known musically as Silky.
Right, yeah. So I'm going to introduce Silky from Death of Guitar Pop. You alright?
Yeah, good man. Yeah, all good. Good to be here.
Excellent. Thanks for coming, man. I will probably end up calling you Ollie at some point.
That's fine,
in the
mate.
Because I don't call you Silky, but I will try my best to to keep it as Silky, mate. Thanks for coming over. I've not seen you. When did I last see you? Was it the Hardcore Listing live show at Christmas?
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, it was a good night. Real cool night, actually. Who did we have there? We had John that done the Rage Against the Machine campaign.
Yeah, I recorded an episode with him last night.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah, Jordan was there.
Yep.
And Pip and the Milk Boys as well. Yeah, it was a good night.
Yeah, the Essex Massive were out in force that night.
Yeah.
So, I've just got you. I haven't got Top Cat, is
Top
it?
Top Cat.
I can't even call him, like, his name there. I've just got you, because I prefer to do the Off the Beaten Track podcast one-on-one.
Yeah, and I'm more interesting than Top Cat as well.
So. all right, well, look, let's dig straight in. So the first track I always ask my guests is, what is the song that you think has the greatest intro?
Yeah, so for me, it's Bittersweet Symphony by The Verve every time. Still my favourite song of all time. I remember the first time I heard it, actually. I was probably about 9 years old, and my dad was dropping me and my brothers off at home after seeing him on a Saturday like we did. And we always talk to one another in Liverpudlian accents because we've got family from Liverpool, and it just became like a sort of in-joke. And I said goodbye to him. He's like, oh, son. He was like, before you go, I've got to show you something. I was like, right. He was like, De Verve. And I was like, what's that? He was like, De Verve. I was like, De Verve. What's De Verve? He was like, De Verve. And he hit play on his car stereo, and this beautiful string section started, and I'm getting chills now thinking about that moment. And yeah, it's been my favourite song ever since. And when I saw The Verve at Glastonbury in 2008 and they played that song, I just blubbered like a little baby the whole time. It was a real moment.
It's an interesting intro. Obviously, I've probably mentioned it in the introduction to this episode that's recorded separately, that obviously all these songs will be available on Silky's playlist. If you just search Off the Beaten Track podcast on Spotify, you can listen to all Silky's tunes on there that we're going to go through today. But Bittersweet Symphony, I mean, I imagine most people that are going to be listening to this will know that song. But I think, even before the ba 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 and the beat drop, there's just a long string, isn't there?
Yeah.
Like before. Yeah. And like, it's a great shout for an intro because it's subtle, and then it's a song in itself, the intro, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because it's just that long string, then that it starts with the famous ba ba da 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 da.
It's that build into it, isn't it? That
just, and it gets louder as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, bomb, when that drops.
Beauty.
It is a cracker. And used from the Rolling Stones, I believe.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, that, isn't it? The Stones own the rights to it all, greedy bastards. Because and interestingly enough, this, I didn't know this until recently. I went on like a music publishing course in London, and that was like a case study into copyright infringement. And it turns out that the Stones, I don't know if you knew this, the Stones actually ripped the last time, because that's where it, basically the string part comes from a Stones album, a really obscure one from the 60s, I believe, that Andrew Luke Oldham had put together, and it was an orchestra doing an interpretation of Stones songs, and the cello player or something wrote that part as an interpretation of the last time, and that's where it came from, and that's where the Verve got the sample from. But the last time in itself, that was the song that was being interpreted, the last time in itself was actually stolen from like an old like blues band.
Oh,
like
really?
50s or something. Yeah, I can't remember the title or the band name. Really weren't famous, but it was obviously before you had the infrastructure of like music copyright and the industry. So the Stones
jumped all over it.
Yeah. Even down like the lyrics, this could be the last time, maybe the last time for me. They ripped that lyric from that old song, you know, got away with it, and then, you know, as when history repeated itself or whatever, they then took the Verve to the cleaners, you know. So yeah, interesting.
It is weird because I follow Nick McCabe, who's the guitarist in the Verve, for those that weren't sure of that, and a mutual friend of ours, also called Nick, has bought guitars off of him and bought effects pedals that were used on Verve albums, and because he's not a multi-millionaire,
really?
You know, and you'd think the Verve, you know, it was, they were just ridiculously big, right? But I guess, I say this was their biggest hit. It wasn't, was it? I think Drugs Don't Work went to number one, didn't it?
Was Bittersweet never number one?
I don't think so.
Wow.
I don't think so. I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure Drugs Don't Work was, and I guess Lucky Man must have been a top 10.
Lucky Man must have been top 10, but,
But that, you know, the it's not Northern Soul. What's the album called?
Urban Hymns.
Urban Hymns. Yeah. I'll borrow. Northern Soul and Urban Hymns are fucking great names for albums.
They're great,
Like,
what did you find? Because I know you was an original Verve head. Like, they were one of your favourite bands, weren't they? And you were sort of living through that as a youngster or whatever. When they released Urban Hymns, how did you react to that? Because obviously they weren't famous for making those big anthems or ballads, were they? They were real psychedelic.
Like the Storm in Heaven era was like that. Mm. But for me, I would say Northern Soul's my favourite album.
Yeah.
By them. But there's still tracks like History on Northern Soul, which is, you know, it wasn't a massive change, Urban Hymns, but I think Urban Hymns is a masterpiece. And I think Come On is probably one of my favourite Verve tracks.
Yeah.
I think it's an absolute monster of a tune.
Yeah. Rolling People as well.
Oh, that album's
that's
solid.
A beast,
and,
isn't it? Yeah.
And I was speaking to, oh God, who did I have on when we was, James from Star Sailor.
Yeah.
And he chose Come On as one of his tracks when he recorded this podcast. And because he's up, he lives just outside Wigan, and that was where he was where he grew up. And he was at the Hay Call show. Like, and I don't know if you was too young for that. Like, did you ever see the video of that show?
I've seen Mark, obviously he's a massive
He's watched that a lot.
He shares a lot of it on Facebook all the time, and it is
it's a monster gig, mate. Absolutely amazing. And I saw them quite a lot, the Verve, and then I saw them their first gig back together at the Randass.
Yeah,
with that kind of, I don't know what that last album was called, or
Fourth.
What was this? Oh yeah, it was called Fourth. What was the first single that had that
Love Is Noise
bit in it? Yeah. Oh,
not a fan.
No, mate.
Bigger live than it was on record. Yeah. You know. I think I heard it live first. I think they played it at Glastonbury.
Yeah.
Last, which was quite bold.
Yeah.
And obviously that hook.
They did. I remember that.
That was massive. It was pumping, and we were all just like, wow, that's the new Verve tune. Like, can't wait to hear that. And then, sorry if you're listening, Richard, but I was a little underwhelmed when I heard the single. I know I think it was a self-produced album. Like, don't quote me on that, but I just didn't think it stood up on record like it did live, you know. It was just never that big on record for me.
I'm not interested in Richard Ashcroft as a as a solo artist.
Right.
When Song for the Lovers come out, I thought that was an alright single.
Mm.
I quite like Check the Meaning.
Don't know that.
I think it was the second single, I thought that was alright. But, oh, I mean, he's done some really tragic stuff, I think. And there you go, I'm never going to get Richard Ashcroft on this podcast now, Ramos. And,
edit that bit
out. Hopefully I've said enough nice things about the Verve. But, I just read an interview where he was saying he'd channeled Curtis Mayfield, Stevie Wonder, Bob Dylan, and I was thinking, fucking hell, this is going to be amazing. And then I heard it, and it was just like glorified Ed Sheeran. It was acoustic Radio 2 safe, dull music. He's
I've got to say, just to interject, I saw him at the O2 Arena a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And he did blow the roof off.
Did he?
Yeah. Yeah, and his own stuff was great. Like, yeah. I haven't ever bought a solo album. So again, if you're listening, Richard, apologies. But it was a really good gig.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the solo stuff sat nicely in the set, you know. So, yeah. But
we see him solo support Coldplay.
Was that Earl's Court?
Yeah.
I was at that gig.
Was you?
Yeah, it was a great gig.
Yeah, me and Nick went up for that show, and I remember Coldplay were incredible that night.
That was so good.
That was just after Rush of Blood come out, wasn't it? I've seen them twice. Once Idlewild with a support.
Right.
And that might have been Earl's Court.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. One was first, one was second. The first time I saw them, they were really brilliant, Coldplay, and the second time I see them, I weren't interested.
Yeah, so when that Earl's Court gig, I think they just put X and Y out. So it was, they'd only just put it out though.
Right.
It was a brand new album. It was at Christmas. And I remember Arctic Monkeys had just blown up.
Yeah.
And he was tinkering about on a piano like during one of the songs or whatever. And he started singing Dance Floor.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And the Arctic Monkeys album hadn't come out or anything like that. Yeah, they were still a bit of a MySpace phenomenon.
Yeah.
You know, it's still a bit of a like a sort of like an underground indie thing, but it was just blowing up, like, you know. And I can remember thinking, fucking hell, Chris Martin's now singing Arctic Monkeys, you know what I mean? Like, they're making that much impact. But yeah, that was a great show. And I didn't actually realise, we didn't know that Ashcroft was supporting that night.
Yeah.
So me and my mate Pelosi, shout out Pelosi, we got down there pretty beard up, got right to the front because it's Coldplay and it's easy to get to the front of Coldplay.
Of course, it's old people like me there.
and fucking hell, blow me down. Ashcroft walks on and goes straight into Sonnet. At that point as well, I think he'd been in the abyss for a few years. I don't think he'd been doing anything.
That's right, yeah.
It was an amazing gig. Yeah, it was a real treat. And then, like you say, Coldplay just blew the roof off, yeah.
And that was exactly the same when I saw them. Because I used to know a rep at Parlophone, and I used to get free tickets. So I'd always sort of say, Nick, oh, do you want to go watch Coldplay? Do you want to go watch whoever it was? And we just go up and watch these shows. And I finished work and just jumped on the train and got up there. And as we was queuing up, I could hear Rosability by Idlewild, and I just thought, fucking hell, Idlewild are supporting.
Yeah.
And just got in there, and I thought they wiped the floor with Coldplay.
Really?
Great
band, Idlewild. Oh,
solid band, mate.
Held the World in Your Arms, that's a tune.
Oh, what a tune.
It's a great song, isn't it?
But it's not on your list, so let's move on to track two, which is the first song that you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you.
Okay, so this one's Ordinary World by Duran Duran. So it was quite a sad story, really. My parents had just split up, and I was about 8 years old. And growing up, there was always, in the early years, there was always two bands on around my parents' house, and that was Madness and Duran Duran. So they were sort of the first two artists I fell in love with.
And how old were you then?
Oh, like right from the age of five. Probably.
No, when?
Oh, sorry, when they split up.
Yeah.
I was 8, 9 years old, something like that. And I remember before they'd split up, we had one of the places, obviously, I got my musical education, was just sat in the back of my parents' car. Because they'd always had the radio playing or tapes or whatever. And I remember one night we were going to see some family friends that lived about an hour away or whatever, and I made my parents rewind the tape and play Ordinary World the whole journey. Like, I just loved that song right from the... I don't know what it was that moved me at like such a young age. And then when my dad left, I had my tape player in my room, and my parents had made me these tapes.
You stayed with your mum?
Yeah. Stayed with mum, yeah. And I remember listening to Ordinary World in my bedroom, and there's a line in it, and it's, "Where is my friend when I need you most?" Yeah. And it just, it got me. You know, it was really, that was, but yeah, I love that song. It's such a beautiful song, and it is a very emotional song anyway.
Definitely.
Very melancholy, yeah.
And it was a massive return to form for Duran Duran as well when that album dropped. You know, they'd been in the abyss a bit, do you know what I mean?
Right, and that was a 90s album, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was early 90s. It was that, and the other single on that was Come Undone, which is a good tune.
Right, yeah. Too Much Information on that album, that's a tune, yeah.
And An Ordinary World, it was like, this is just a fucking solid record. Mm. And the easiest guitar solo to play ever, yet it's brilliant.
Yeah.
Like,
so simple, but so beautiful.
Yeah. So, all right, let's talk about growing up a little bit. So, where was you born?
I was born in Harold Wood Hospital.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so, growing up, where in your early years? Brentwood. So, you've always been?
Yeah, always Brentwood, yeah.
Okay. And so I guess most listeners will know that for all the wrong reasons, and the spray tans and the fake boobies and stuff. But there's a lot more happening in Brentwood than that. And so I normally ask people at this point, was their music on at home? And obviously you've answered that already by saying there was lots of Duran and Madness and stuff. And in regards to Madness, obviously they've had a massive influence on Deaf guitar pop.
Yeah.
Could you see the videos as well? You know, was you sort of in, I mean, for me, obviously being a lot older than you, you know, I would see Madness videos on Top of the Pops and stuff like that. You know,
yeah.
Did you have a visual representation at that age of Madness?
Oh,
or?
Mate, yeah. I mean, my dad handed me the VHS of Divide, or put it on in our little playroom. When I was about five, and I instantly like fell in love with Suggs and thought, that's what I want to be with my life.
Yeah.
That is, I want some of this.
Yeah.
And watching all those videos on that Divine Madness VHS, like all their greatest hits, as a child, sort of didn't really understand about the music industry and where bands came from and the rest of it. It was like watching a musical, you know? And me and my two brothers, who were pretty much still in nappies, we'd skank about in our little playroom to them, and we'd be getting up on a Saturday morning and putting it on ourselves over, like, you know, cartoons or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, it was, the visual impact of Madness was huge, as well as obviously the songs, you know?
Definitely, And I think it's, you know, it shouldn't be overlooked, and I've said it on countless times on different podcasts, that I think some of that comical visual representation of Madness has cast a bit of a shadow over just how good that songwriting is, just how smart the lyrics were.
Yeah.
You know, as I think I might even have said when you and Top Cat come on Hardcore Listing, I think lyrically they're as vital as the Kinks, you know. I think they tackled, you know, their social commentary, you know, embarrassment being a prime example, you know. He's an absolutely superb record. So, all right, well, let's start to sort of move through, because track three is a cracker.
I can't remember what track three is.
I asked you to remind you of the song that reminds you of your time at school.
Oh, your favourite band's tune. Closet Freddie D fanboy.
Brilliant.
I've seen the caps, mate.
Oh, yeah, I've got a couple of red caps.
Yeah, so the track that reminds me of my school years, Limp Bizkit, Break Stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I was very much a cliche, pissed off teenager.
Yeah.
And So when I was, like, explain, when I was growing up, my introduction to music and pop culture was 80s stuff from my parents. And then when the Britpop thing happened, we'd watch TFI Friday as a little treat on every Friday night, and Top of the Pops and all that. So British music was very much my early years. And then at secondary school, this wave of American pop culture or whatever came over, and you had like skateboarding through the Tony Hawk's Pro Skater game, Kerrang television, and MTV2.
Is this American Pie kind of
exactly
territory?
Yeah, Jackass, yeah, all that kind of stuff was huge with the youth culture over here, you know. Rap music, gangster rap, and then came your favourite genre, rap metal.
Yeah, all over it.
And yeah, just as an angry teenager that liked the attitude and the controversial, you know, the swearing in the rap music and related a lot to that,
yeah,
but also loved rock music and guitar music because that's kind of what I'd been brought up on. And I'd also kind of discovered like Nirvana and stuff just prior to this through, you know, mates, older brothers that handed the CDs down and whatever. And then, yeah, that come along, and it was just, as like I say, as an angry teenager, a beautiful marriage, you know what I mean? Obviously, Rage Against the Machine had happened years before this, but that just wasn't on our radar.
Yeah.
We sort of discovered that later off the back of bands like Limp Bizkit and Linkin Park and stuff.
But that's good, though, because, like, you know, when you're at school, you listen to what your mates listen to, do you know what I mean? And, you know, you find your little bits and pieces that, you know, it's easy to look back on now and think, oh, bloody hell. But if you listen to that now, break stuff, I'm sure it would trigger 1,000 memories, right?
Yeah.
So it's great, right?
Yeah, and it's as real you nostalgia said, buzz, yeah.
Through getting into music like that, it helped you then do what most, you know, a lot of people don't bother doing, which is then looking back to see, well, where did this sound come from? Okay, there's Rage there, you know, and looking back and seeing the, you know, what else you can find through association.
Yeah.
And just develop your taste like that.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You remember the boy bands like Busted and McFly and that with the guitars and the punk rock hairdos and that. You know, a lot of people slagged them off at the time. I understand why, but at the same time, that was a lot of people's introduction, like you say, to sort of harder music and that sort of fashion, and that might have led them down the path to then get into Green Day, and then who knows, maybe venture into Minor Threat or something, or Refuse, don't you know?
You know, as much as I'm no Ed Sheeran fan, you know, I live in a household where I get exposed to a lot of his music.
The kids love it.
Yeah, they all love it.
Yeah.
To me, I think, as a lover of creative guitar music, I think I'd much rather young people see him and pick up a guitar and start writing songs than, you know, I don't know, maybe it's just my age, and, you know, I guess hopefully there are kids that are just sitting there on computers making really good electronic music as well. But, you know, I do think that, you know, if, as a role model, if you can look at this kind of scruffy lad that he's certainly not Brad Pitt with a guitar and a loop pedal and nothing else selling out 3 nights at Wembley.
Got to take your house to that.
You've got to kind of, you know, I just think fair play, mate.
The thing with Ed Sheeran as well, right, is, you know, a lot of people quote him because he is everywhere and music's not to mute, generally not to I wanted to say muso's taste, because that's not really fair on him.
It's just
very safe pop music, right? You know, the song about the Irish fiddle or whatever.
Oh, mate, that is one, is it? Fucking tragic.
But there are some nice pop songs in there, you know, and he's obviously a great songwriter. And yeah, like you say, he's sold 3 nights out at Wembley Stadium on his own. You know, I take my hat off to him. But people don't tend to realise, or people forget, that he started just like every other musician. Like, he played the Bar House, mate.
Yeah.
In that venue that you used to promote at, you know, way down the bill. Do you know what I mean? And spent the first couple of years you know, in his late teens or whatever, just going and doing the toilet circuit, yeah, and playing any venue that would have him or whatever, yeah, and yeah, earning his stripes, yeah, and now look at it, and I just think fair enough. Do, yeah, you know what I mean? He didn't go on a, not there's, again, people, I was going to say he didn't go on X Factor or anything like that, but people slate that, but that still takes a lot of balls, do you know, yeah, what I mean? It's a, yeah, washed up concept and it's boring and I don't like it, do you know, yeah, what I mean? And not a fan of most of the music that comes out off the back of it, but still takes a lot of balls to you know, expose yourself like that on national TV, yeah, and audition, you know, yeah, and risk humiliation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Your career potentially being over before it starts. But yeah, Ed Sheeran didn't, you know, again, he didn't do that. That some people call that a fast track, and I suppose it is in a sense. He didn't do that. He went out and played the toilet circuit, yeah, for a couple of years, you know. Yeah,
we've all done that.
Yeah, well, exactly, yeah, mate, yeah.
I don't think I've ever done the 3 nights at Wembley at the end.
That'd be nice.
So when you hear break stuff, like, what, if I was to play it now, what do you think your first memory will be?
My first memory would be probably, probably just the music video, which just popped, yeah, in my head. The first time I saw that video, I was around my nan's house, and my nan and dad had my nan and granddad had a few quid, and they had Sky, and, yeah, so I used to go around there and gorge on Sky and watch, yeah, wrestling and music, yeah, television and that, you know. And I was watching MTV2, and this video came on, and Eminem was in it, and Snoop Dogg, and, yeah, and all these skate. It was in a skate park, all these skaters doing flip tricks and spin, and all these kids moshing and all the rest of it. And I just remember, like, my jaw literally dropping. You know, yeah, I was like 13, 14 years old. And I actually ran to, my nan used to keep a notepad by the phone or whatever. I ran, grabbed the pen and the bit of paper, waiting for the song title, yeah, and artist to come up at the end so I could write it down,
yeah,
and go and get that record. Do you know what, brilliant, I mean? It was a real, and so I always just think of the music video when I hear it and get, yeah, that nostalgic, like, buzz back. Yeah, yeah.
So you went to school in Brentwood?
Yeah.
Yeah. Posh school?
My primary school was fairly posh. It weren't a private school. Yeah. It was in a leafy suburb. Very idyllic, actually. It didn't really set us up well for what was to come at senior school. And, yeah, then County High was not a posh school. Yeah, our senior, yeah, school was, yeah, yeah, old school. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Did you enjoy it?
No. I loved primary school, but... yeah, as high school was a difficult time for me. There was a lot of shit going on in my family life, and I was sort of the man of the house at a young age.
Both your brothers are younger than you, right?
Yeah, yeah. There's about, I think my mum had three under three. Yeah, 3 years older, wow, than Sam, 2 years older than Matt. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so because there was tough things going on at home, that made... Yeah, being a teenager difficult, and then school was a rough ride. I think a quarter of our year group didn't finish school, and our year group is notorious for being one of the worst years that school's ever had.
Didn't finish school?
Yeah, honestly, mate. Yeah, so many people didn't finish school, and then right at the end of school, something really awful happened. My good pal Darren Brooksy, I think we spoke about this before, possibly on the podcast, but I know you know the story. Yeah. So my old band had a song called Brooksy's Box.
And, best song you've ever done.
Oh, cheers, man. Thank you. And yeah, I lost a pal, basically, at the age of 15. And he, our school wasn't really, there wasn't a lot of, you had to pretend, you had to cover up being a grunger, otherwise you'd get beaten up.
Right.
It was all garage and that, and then people were just obsessed with Tupac and Biggie, which is great music.
Was there a little gang though that wanted to rock?
Do you know what? In my year, no. There was some, looking back, there were some really cool grunger kids that used to get bullied badly for it.
Yeah.
And really, I should have been in that crew. I should have held me own, yeah, but I didn't have the minerals, and neither did my pal Darren. But they owned it, bless, yeah, them, you know, and they got fucking beats for it, like, all the time, yeah, you know. But in the year group below me was Bonsai, Luke,
yeah,
you know, Rishi, and Ronnie, who's, yeah, in Electric Child House. So the guys that were in States of Emotion with me and the guys from Electric Child House.
Yeah. So just to put a bit of backstory into there quickly, just for people that are listening, you was the singer in States of Emotion with a few of the lads that you've just mentioned there, and the guy Brick that's just worked on your new Def Guitar Pop video.
Yep.
Which is available to watch.
It is. YouTube, Facebook.
And Electric Childress is your younger brother Matthew's band, isn't it?
Yeah.
And they're pretty fucking special as well.
Yeah, amazing band.
So I just wanted to fill in the dots there, so people knew what we were talking about.
Yeah, so the year below, I gravitated towards those guys, you know, and that was kind of at the end of school. We only become pals and formed the band.
So were they all wearing their colours at school?
They were, and their year group were just a lot, that was just a nicer group
of people. More liberal, yeah.
Yeah, more liberal, exactly, yeah. Whereas our year group was just a cutthroat year. Yeah. It was fights every day and drugs and all that, you know, and it was a tough year group. So, I can't remember where we were going with that there.
I guess I'll just ask you if you enjoyed school.
Right, so then at the end of school, so this one particular guy that I bonded with in my form, Darren, who was sort of a bit of an in-betweener like me that was a bit nervous about sticking a Nirvana badge on his backpack.
Yeah.
We were closet grungers, you know. He got me into a lot of the good music that, you know, shaped my life, like Nirvana and stuff. His brother was basically a cool grunger.
Yeah.
And he'd made, like, a mixtape for Darren had nicked all his music and then made me a mixtape and lent me Nirvana Nevermind.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And all the rest of it. Darren gave me the number to go and get guitar lessons. And we were in the first incarnation of States of Emotion, had Darren in the band, and Darren sadly passed away in my last year at school, and that was like the final nail in the coffin at senior school for me, you know. So unfortunately, you know, I just didn't enjoy school, but it was probably more, although it was a tough year group, it was probably just more to do with personal things like
Okay.
But that's why I loved Limp Bizkit, because it was an angry outlet. Yeah. You know what I mean?
And so I think it's amazing, though, that you looked at the year below and connected with a gang there.
Yeah.
And yous are still a proper tight firm, aren't you?
Oh, now, mate. Yeah, it's a like, real band of brothers. Yeah.
It's impressive to see. You know, I've got lots of different sort of groups of friends, but, the, you know, whenever I... would put your band on, or whenever I put your brother's band on, or Top Cat's band on.
Yep.
There'd be a core of sort of 20, 30 people of the same people that were there to support each and every one of them.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, your gang of pals. It's like, it's pretty impressive, you know, that however many years later, yous are all still
it's pretty a proper cool. unit.
That's great. That's great. All right, well, look, for track four, I asked you to pick the first record that you purchased.
Right, first record that I purchased. Mm. So I did post something on Instagram a couple of weeks ago, and just want to clear up that at some I can't remember the first single I bought, and I made a joke that it was a Jerry Halliwell single. I did own a Jerry Halliwell single.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it was the first single that I ever owned.
What Jerry Halliwell one?
I think it was It's Raining Men, Stu, to be honest with you.
Solid choice.
But the first bit of music I willingly went out and bought, I'm gonna claim back some cool points here, was Blur, Park Life.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I was off school, pulled a sickie, and my nan and my mum took me up to Brentwood High Street. We went in WH Smith's, and I was obsessed with the Beano at the time. Loved the Beano. And they said, you can have, like, you can pick something with your pocket money or whatever. And I went round the shop and I picked up a 50 years of Dandy and Beano annual thing. And then I saw Blur, Park Life, the tape. And I'd been getting into Blur through a cool mate of my mum's, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Who used to come round and play it or whatever. And so I took both things up, and they said, you can't have both. You've got to make the decision, you know? And it was a tough decision, but I went with Blur. And yeah, that was the first bit of music I willingly went out and purchased with my own money. And what an album as well.
Could you draw comparisons from seeing videos like the video to Park Life and you know, the almost mod influenced, you know, dress, you know, the cherry reds and the Fred Perrys. Could you feel a connection between Madness, you know, the stuff that you grew up on and Park Life at that point? Had you made that connection?
No, now I can, obviously, it's clear as day, but no, then it was like a subconscious thing. But yeah, I suppose again, it was as a kid, it was just like the videos were just really vibrant, weren't they?
Yeah.
You know, and really fun and full of attitude and very easy to sing along to.
Yeah.
I can't remember whether that was after the Blur Oasis thing with Country House or not, because a Blur's album hadn't come out at that point, had it? Was it Great Escape with Country House? Hadn't come out when the Battle of Britpop happened.
Yeah.
The Oasis hadn't released Morning Glory, and Blur hadn't released
Great Escape.
I don't think, had they? You remember?
No.
So I think it might have been off the back of that. I think it might have been off the Battle of Britpop, and I was in Camp Blur at the time, even though I loved, you know, Oasis and Blur were playing in my house because of my parents. And but Blur, I really took a liking to Blur, and that was my first album that I bought.
Hello, I've interrupted the podcast again, haven't I? Sorry, it won't take a sec. All I want to say is, the songs that we're talking about in this podcast, if we can't play them, it's just because of the regulations regarding playing licensed music and such. So if you want to hear the songs, just go over to Spotify and search Off The Beat and Track Podcast, and you can listen to all the songs, because I've put playlists up for each of these. If you can't find it on there, I'll send links on all the social media accompanying each episode, so you've just got to press that one button and you can go through and you can enjoy all the songs that our guest picks. Anyway, I'll shut up, get back to the podcast. See you on the other side. Is it your favourite Blur album still?
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a cop-out answer, but I'm a greatest hits man with Blur, you know? I really am. And I do like different sort of songs off each album, you know? We've spoke before about... I love Advert. I know you love that song as well. If I had to take one to a desert island, I think, just for the nostalgia, I'd take Park Life.
Yeah. Solid. Sorry. So was there, I'm just trying to think of, like, of my knowledge of Brentwood, like, you said you bought the album in Smith's, like, was there any record shops in Brentwood? Was there little indies or anything?
Yeah, there was a record shop called Moondance.
Nice.
Which was really cool. It was right in the middle of Brentwood High Street. I don't know what it would be now. Oh, God knows.
Probably someone's tanning salon yeah, from Towie.
But, so you had Moondance, and then you also had Our Price as well.
Right. Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, yeah. And then, obviously, John Menzies sold CDs.
Yeah.
W.H. Smith as well.
Yep. It's so weird when you say things like this, because I've had so many reminders of places from recording these. I got sent something over the other day and said, yeah, no, I bought that in Boots.
Yeah.
Because Boots used to sell records. And it's like, it's just crazy, isn't it? I think it's great that, I mean, I was in HMV yesterday, massive vinyl selection there, and I was in Tesco's, big vinyl selection.
Yeah, it's same things in that, they're all doing vinyl now, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not one of the people who say, oh, it's got to be vinyl, you know, I'm not, you know, enjoy music however you want to enjoy it, but I do think if you buy on vinyl, rather than Spotify or something like that, you'll probably listen to the album.
Oh, yeah.
Rather than 10%. Get sidetracked by that. Yeah. You might like this, you know.
I think it's healthy for both artists and fans to have that physical thing that they can, you know, buy. And I think, like, you know, we had this chat last time about the Madness records and that, and you pulled a few out.
Yeah, of course.
You know, and it's just something really, really... It's just kind of like a lovely process, isn't it? Opening that sleeve, smelling it. Do you know what I mean? And looking down the lyrics.
It's something to hold.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
You know, putting it on a turntable and that. You've got to give it more attention. You know? Spotify is great. Like, if you've kind of just discovered, well, it's good for discovering new music in general because of the playlists and stuff and the suggestions. But, you know, if you want to hear a new band on the quick, if I came in here today and you said, oh, you've got to hear this new band, I'll get my phone up, and within seconds we'd have it on, which is great. It's a great discovery tool. And, you know, just if what's great as well is if you're having a few drinks with pals and you can pass the tune and chat music, and it's very quick and very instant. But, yeah, if you really want to appreciate an artist and that, you know, that particular body of work, it's just a very nice thing, isn't it, to be able to sit there and have your moment and, really, really take it in and invest.
Okay, so, going to move on to track 5. So, by now, before you tell me the track, you've left school, looking at the... knowing when this came out, I know that you'd left school, and by now, I guess your then band was a gigging band.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, for track 5, I want you to tell me the song that soundtracked your years clubbing. You're still a young lad. I'm not suggesting you ain't allowed to go clubbing anymore, mate.
Well, for me, I was never really like a raver. I mean, I loved... we'll talk about The Prodigy in a minute, my sort of club years were the indie clubs, you know? When I was... I suppose when I was 18 was when that kind of when that indie boom happened in Britain. Well, not in Britain, it started with The Strokes, didn't it? And then over here, suddenly it became the coolest thing in the world to go to a music festival, wear a pair of women's jeans and buy a pair of pointy shoes and have a silly haircut, you know. And it was
you ticked all them boxes, mate.
it was a good time, you know. And I just remember, so the track that I've picked is the Rat by The Walkman. And I remember this particular night we had, and I think we just turned 18, and we went up to Frog at the Mean Fiddler.
Okay.
Underneath the Astoria, which was, I think, London's biggest indie disco at the time, Tottenham Court Road. And, we got in there, and one of my mates got completely out of his nut on a pill. We got, like, obviously mega pissed up. I weren't into the drugs and that then. But I remember my mate just looked like a skeletal, and it was well early doors. I was quite concerned about it. It was a bit of an eye-opener, and you know, club was packed full of beautiful girls, and this tune, like, every DJ that came on. I actually remember Frank Turner DJ'd that night, and he was a million dead at the time. Show me age now. And this tune, every DJ that I'd never heard it before, every DJ that came on that night played The Rap by The Walkman, and it just blew my mind. I thought, oh god, find out
it's a fucking incredible
so
record.
Good, yeah, and it really stood up on the dance floor, like, people going wild to it, you know. And then we got out of there at 4 a.m. or whatever, and got over to Liverpool Street and slept at Liverpool Street on the benches until the first train come back to Brentwood. And it was just a legendary night. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It was like our first proper night out, clubbing all night.
If you hear that song, it makes you think of that.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, that's why I answered with that one, yeah.
It's got ridiculous energy, that record. The drums, are off the scale.
Yeah, and the vocal and all, it's just like ripping his soul, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know, with every word,
Everything, bass lines off the scale. It's just, if you're ever going to, you know, pick an indie
anthem.
Club
yeah.
banger.
Yeah, banger, that's a better word, yeah.
Rap by The Walkman all day long.
Yeah.
I couldn't agree more, mate. It's absolutely brilliant. So, to discuss clubbing a little bit, mainstream clubbing, that didn't appeal?
No.
Because there must have been, in Brentwood, Sam's and the Sugar Hut, obviously.
Yeah, and you had a few, obviously, the Romford club scene with like Time and Envy and that. It's always been huge with Essex culture, isn't it? And I did like the, you know, at school, I liked the garage music and that. Everybody was, I turned my hand to MCing for a while. There's a tape somewhere, man. And I really hope you don't ever have my brother Matt on one of your podcasts, because he will recite every single word of my verses. Like, he never lets me forget.
Oh, that's golden.
Yeah. MC extraordinaire.
You wanker.
yeah. Sad thing was, I probably was just doing it to fit in. Really, I just want to get my guitar around and fucking buff. I've got to do something and keep...
Don't try and start getting credible now, MC extraordinaire.
Oh, it was fucking awful, man. It was awful. And, but I liked the garage music. It weren't, you know, it was never my first choice. Like I say, I was a closet grunger for my school.
Yeah, but when you leave school, that's when you can tread the path you want to tread, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And so I like, I don't, you know, I did like the dance music and that. Like, I've always liked a good song, like you know, a good song is a good song, but I never really, just that whole scene and culture just didn't ever really talk to me like guitar music did, you know. For me, the clubbing thing was just mainly indie and rock clubs, you know.
So what did you want from them when you went out? What was it that you was looking for, you know?
To pull?
No,
not just to pull. And I never pulled back then.
Yeah.
But, I just wanted to go and hear music that I liked and be around like-minded people, you know, and dress the way I wanted to dress without feeling uncomfortable. That was half the battle as well, actually. Like, to go to one of those clubs like you're talking about and dress the way we dressed, it was provocative, and you'd feel on edge because you'd probably get started on.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that was, again, I probably never felt like I'd be welcome in certain types of those clubs.
Yeah.
You know, it was different when we did start going Fabric when we were in our 20s, you know, and that was a free for all, obviously, because everybody was just out there nut on drugs. So,
were they all right with your Limp Bizkit tattoo? You
know? I always covered it up, mate. Always covered it up. But, so Fabric was interesting, you know. Again, I used to go and we used to have a crack, but it was like dubstep was a real big thing then, and I kind of was just going to have a night out with my mates.
Yeah.
It was never as fun for me as the Indian rock clubs, because never had the passion for the music, really, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense, mate.
Yeah.
All right, so for track six, I ask you a favourite song from an artist from your hometown. Oh, let's say Canty, obviously.
Yeah. So, I actually had second thoughts on this last night. I thought, no, I'm not going to change it. So,
you sure?
Yeah, I'm not going to change
it. You can have a couple.
Okay, we'll go for a couple. So, Ian Dury, Sweet Jim Vincent.
Solid choice,
yeah,
mate.
Yeah, it's going to be my choice. A beautiful song.
Yeah.
You know? I think we might do a cover of that soon.
Nice.
Guitar pop, like live. I think that'll work really well with what we do.
I can hear, you can hear, you know, for Ian Dury fans, I think, you know, you can you should go and check out Death Guitar Box. I think there's influences in there.
Oh, massively, especially on the new record. Yeah, just really letting the accent rip, you know, yeah. what I mean, on the songs. But I was telling a friend last night, Dan from the mod band Block 33, big up Block 33, about what I was coming to do with you today, Stu, and telling him, was talking through the choices and stuff. And it suddenly dawned on me, I was like, Prodigy, yeah. Essex. And like, as a kid, you know, going back again, I loved Prodigy. When Firestarter came out, I remember we used to go to Light, I think it was called Light Up the Night or something, and it was when the Christmas lights came on in Brentwood. I probably would have been still in primary school in year six or something. I remember spraying the air and doing the horns.
Brilliant.
Like red, wearing the eye mascara, the lock, yeah. dog collar, and I don't think I had the
I should point out as well, when Ollie was nine, he couldn't have looked any more like Macaulay Culkin if he'd tried as well.
And I had like a red and white jumper. It weren't quite the American flag, like weren't bang on Keith Flint. I had all the posters on the wall. I pre-ordered Fat of the Land down at Moondance Records. I was thinking last night, maybe just for that, you know, they were a real love of mine growing up. Maybe I should have said Prodigy, but I don't know, like, Ian Dury, I've been listening to for a good few years now, and I just love that song, Sweet Gene Vincent. And I, the way I weighed it up to pick that one over Prodigy was like, do you know what, if I had to lose one of them and keep one, I'd want to keep Gene Vincent. You know, it's a beautiful song, isn't it?
Mate, perfect. Absolutely perfect. Did you ever see, you've been way too young to have seen Injury, wouldn't you?
I
saw Injury support Madness.
Oh, at Madstock.
Yeah. And it was fantastic. Absolutely everything you'd want from a day out, you know, the whole day was great, but Injury was phenomenal. And have you heard the new Baxter Jury album?
I haven't, no.
It's fantastic.
Good?
Yeah, really, really good.
He's a friend of Matt's, actually, my brother's. He cuts his hair.
Oh, really?
Times of time, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Did you watch the film? The Jury film. Because I'd read the book before I watched it.
Oh, okay.
And it's pretty brutal, you know. It doesn't paint him out to be necessarily the greatest husband and father.
Yeah.
But you know, as an artist, you can't fault it.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, as a performer, just captivating. And yeah. You know, like, and he was, I suppose, not that I was around, but he was so different to the norm of what pop stars were.
Completely.
You know,
completely.
I know it was a bit more wide open, like, as to what it is now, popular culture or whatever, but he really was something else, wasn't he?
Definitely. He was kicking against the pricks long time before, you know, most of the other people were. So in regards to, obviously you haven't seen him live, but I want to talk about, obviously he was in a band, and we want to talk about where you grew up, like live venues and stuff, like, you know, what was going on in you know, the
shady promoters, mate. Everywhere.
No, I'm talking in, you know, close at home. You ain't gonna start digging me out.
Yeah, the Hermit Club in Brentwood.
Okay.
That was a great place. I think it's still going, actually. Okay. Don't think it's got an alcohol licence anymore, so it literally is just a youth club now, I think.
And that would do shows for, what, 14 plus, or they all ages shows? I remember.
No, I think it was. I think it was. You could be younger than 14. I think. I don't know exactly what the age limit was, but yeah, it was essentially a youth club that was like a music venue on a Friday and Saturday night with a proper stage and PA and a bar as well. So it weren't just kids; like, you get adults coming along and watching bands. And that was a good education there. You know, I used to go and hang out there from about the age of 13, I suppose, and watch all the local bands. And it was just good. You know, it was just good to go in and see live music up close and personal. Mm. And not, you know, just seeing out how, you know, amateur bands operated and how it what went on and how you it inspired us, obviously, to form States of Emotion. We played our first gig there. The school used to do a gig there once a year, and it was part of that, what they put on. You had that. You had I just caught the tail end of the Army and Navy in Chelmsford, which is obviously, if you're from Essex, you'll know it's a legendary venue, isn't it? I went on this... I've got to mention V Festival, actually, because that's, I think that's been big for creatives in Essex. Obviously, it went very commercial in the end, and it no longer exists. I know they've just recently put another festival on in place of it that looked pretty cool.
I think V was a reflection of where, you know, alternative, mainstream alternative music was heading. I think it was just reflective of that. Do you know what I mean? I don't think they, you know, I just think that a lot of the guitar music that was coming out in the later years of V probably wasn't solid enough to sell the tickets to facilitate the festival. So they probably had to throw some other stuff in it, which, you know, for the guitar heads, it wrote that festival off for them. And unfortunately, you know, it did then become a festival for girls with daisy chains around their heads and posh wellies, you know.
Yeah, it became T4 on the beach.
It did. And, you know, and it was a shame because, again, when the first few episodes of this I've done, as this one is I spoke about Essex and growing up in Essex, and the amount of times that people have referenced, you know, seeing bands and V being something absolutely, you know, vital in their in their, you know, formative years of festivals and seeing bands live. And I will always say the greatest live band I ever saw was the Prodigy, at V.
At V,
And when Fat the Land dropped, it was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. And
I remember that happening as a kid and being gutted that I weren't old enough to be there. You know,
it was a bit special, mate. It really was. All right, so for the last track, Ol, because where are we? 52 minutes. So this is going to work out nicely. We'll have it around about the hour mark. So I ask you to pick a song that many people may not know that you would like them to hear. And I've got to be honest with you, Ol, I've not listened to it yet.
Okay, cool.
So
I think you'll like it.
Okay, well, you can tell me why I'm going to like
it. Right. So I discovered this song watching a series called Banshee. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yes.
Decent, right? And there's a scene where the main character has a cage fight with this guy, comes out battered and bruised but triumphant, and this song come on, and I was, you know, when something just knocks your socks off instantly, and I was like, what the fuck is this? Do you know, I need this song in my life. And you know, I looked on, I think I found it on YouTube, and it had like 40,000 views or something like that. And I thought, no, like, and mate, it is a banger. It's like, it's got the kind of,
what's it? Do you want to talk about?
Sorry, it's Ponderosa, Hold On You.
Okay.
They're an Australian band, fairly recent, I believe. I don't know much about them. I just love this song. And it's kind of like, because of the Times era Kings of Leon, it's got a bit of that about it. Like a bit of that soulful kind of vocal and melancholy, sort of just got a melancholy vibe about it. But it's got a real it's a fucking rock and roll tune. And it's, you know, like going back to the Verve, it's got that really meaty wall of sound, like driven guitar just sweeping, you know, with this dreamy delay lard and guitar riff going over the top. It's just a beautiful song, and it just, you know, I could have picked so many songs for this question because there's so many, you know, so many just from the bands that we've, you know, that you've probably put on down the years at the clubs and that, there's so many lost gems there.
So many
of those bands have got an anthem of their own that didn't quite see the light of day, you know. So I could have gone down many angles for this one, but I had to pick that tune because that seems to be a song that I go back to and listen to a lot at the moment, and I've probably been listening to that for about a year and a half, and it's not got old once, you know. So
you said at the beginning that you made your parents put Ordinary World on loop for that car journey, and you've just said that you've been mincing that for a year and a half. Are you one of them people that if you hear a song and it just knocks you sideways, it's just constantly on repeat?
Yeah, I'm a bit of an addict like that,
I'm terrible for it. Like, I will just rewind it, play it. And I think, like, why do you think that is? Do you think that's to appreciate or to understand it? Do you break it down? Do you try and sort of, you know, musically?
I don't think it's to understand it, because sometimes if I hear like a Stone Roses record, like their debut album is probably my favourite record, favourite album. sometimes I'll hear a little something in that song, in one of those songs that I've never heard, and I think, oh, I didn't want to hear that because I don't want to just listen out for that every time now because I don't want this to be ruined. Do you know what I mean? Like a little layer or something, or like a bass thing I didn't notice, which will probably, oh, it's always going to be good in it if it's Stone Roses, but I just don't want to change. I just want more of that.
Yeah.
I add it over and over again, just chase that buzz and that feeling, you know. It's a very addictive thing, you know, but the best stuff and the stuff that I love and listen to for years, I just don't tire of hearing it. We can put I Am the Resurrection on now, or even Sweet Child of Mine, one of the most overplayed songs, Teen Spirit.
Yeah.
I still love it. Yeah. You know, I just don't tire of, once that, when I get that instant sort of connection and gratification from a bit of music, now and again, I will rinse a song and go, do you know what, actually, I'm a bit sick of this.
Yeah.
But a lot of them stand the test of time, and I just never, that feeling that I first have when I listen to them, it never gets old, it never gets boring, so I always chase that buzz, you know.
Oh, nice. Well, what are you up to? Let's finish on some shameless plug-in, oh?
Yeah, shameless plug-in. So at the moment, we're putting together a bit of a plan for a second record. The debut album's been out for nearly a year now. We released it last November. It's going really well.
What we do is we'll put some... you're on Spotify, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm on Spotify. And
so we'll put some Deafy Guitar Pop tracks on... I keep saying... Ollie Silky's playlist on our Off the Beaten Track playlist for this podcast. So, you know, not only do you hear his songs, but we'll give you a nice cross section of stuff to understand what Death Guitar Pop are all about.
Yeah. So we're just working on a second record and a plan of sort of getting that out there, because everything we do is very DIY. So there's a lot of the grind that people don't see behind the scenes that sort of goes into, you know, doing it professionally and giving the fans a proper release, you know what I mean? Not just a slapdash thing. But we enjoy that now. We've learned to sort of embrace that. Sort of in the short-term plans are in November, we're out with the full band every weekend. Next London show is The Garage on the 10th of November. Don't know if this podcast will be out by then, but if it is, then please come along. And at the moment, we're organising a tour of Germany for January and a full UK tour for the end of February / beginning of March next year. So, yeah,
wow.
Look forward to that one.
And you set up a management company?
Yeah, set up a management company. Initially, it was because my wife, Stephanie, and I have been managing Deaf Guitar Pop now since it started. But we're also now working with new bands as well. I've just launched a new release for a brand new mod band called Block 33. They just put their debut single out last Friday. It's going down really well.
Is that already on Spotify?
That's on Spotify. Eye of the Hurricane. Yeah, check it out. Block 33. So yeah, working with new bands, which is good fun, very rewarding. And yeah, just grinding away independently. But it's good fun. I think it's a really good time to be an independent musician or an independent music startup company, because the internet has given us platforms now where we can get direct to our fan bases. You know, it takes a lot of time and a lot of money and a lot of patience, but it's cut out the middleman and the need for sort of you know, major labels, radios, like gatekeepers. It's not as integral to have those people in your corner anymore. Have that golden ticket to the chocolate factory, you know, if you're willing to grind and get your hands mucky and learn, you know. So we're just enjoying the hustle of it all. You know,
wicked. Silky, it's been a lovely
pleasure.
Thanks loads, man. And I'm sure I'll see you again soon.
Pleasure as always, Stu. Cheers, mate.
Take it easy, buddy. There you go. It was a really nice afternoon I had with Silky. It's a pleasure to catch up with him. I've not seen him for a while. I don't think I've seen him since the Hardcoreist in Christmas show, the live show. And it's always lovely to catch up with him because, as you know now, just a really nice fella. So go and subscribe, and if you like this episode and you're interested in other musicians and stuff like that and their stories, then have a little look in the back catalogue, because there's plenty there. I've been blessed to have met some really nice people in recent months with this podcast and chatted about their creativity and their life, and it's been insightful and just really, really bloody nice. So thanks for listening as well, mainly. Thanks for your support, because if you didn't listen, I wouldn't, well, I probably would do it because I like talking about music and I'm a nosy bastard. But yeah, thanks lots, peeps, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye. It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.